I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak here. And let me just put this title page. And you allow me to speak here. For instance, I go to Mexico next week, and only one condition, that I do not present my talk. I get my visa only on that interesting condition. So probably I will come in. Maybe not even that. Okay. So I'm going to talk about an approach to gradings of simple Lie algebras. And actually, not only Lie algebras, but also Jordan algebras. Because the approach is such that it automatically gives you the results both for Lie algebra and Jordan algebra cases. Oh, thank you very much. It's even better. So, this is several authors here. So with Segal and Zaitsev, in 2001, we published a paper where we described gradings of associative matrix algebras. And then we began working with Shestakov on Jordan algebras. And maybe 2002, we published a paper about gradings of Jordan algebra of bilinear form. And then last year, when I was in Brazil and worked jointly with Shestakov, we started thinking about special Jordan algebras. And then by the fall, it became apparent that this also works in the case of Lie algebras. So by this moment, we have a description of gradings by finite abelian groups on simple Lie algebras of types B, C, D, and on Jordan algebras of types, not exceptional algebras, of course, and also what is standardly called H of Rn. This is a matrix algebra with AB plus BA multiplication. This still remains to be a little bit unclassified. So let me go ahead. Well, maybe I will make my historical remarks during the talk, because, you know, of course, there are some papers describing gradings on Lie algebras. In particular, Victor Katz, he described elements of finite order in the automorphism groups of all simple Lie algebras over an algebraically closed field of characteristic zero, and this automatically means gradings by cyclic groups. Okay, so this was a paper of 1969. But if you go beyond cyclic groups, actually completely different effects arise, and I will talk about this. So this is just some simple reminder. What is a graded algebra? It does not need to be Lie or associative or whatever. So this is a graded algebra, and the support is the set of all elements of the group such that the component A sub G is not zero. Maybe I have some pointer. Let's try to do this way. Okay. So, again, what is a homogeneous element of degree? It's an element from the component A sub G, which is different from zero. I usually use multiplicative notation, which is probably a little bit confusing in the situation of Lie algebras. So the grading group is multiplicative group. This is more or less historically because we have gradings in our previous work. We have gradings of matrix algebras, not necessarily by abelian groups, but by any finite groups. So therefore, we keep this multiplicative notation. Oh, I forgot to say a word about what I wrote here. So this is a very principal thing in the whole stuff. So if you have a grading by group G, and this is a finite abelian group normally, in all cases except few exceptions, then we also consider G hat. This is the group of characters on the group G. Okay? So this is all homomorphisms from the group into the multiplicative group of the field. And of course, if the group is graded, if an algebra is graded by G, then G hat acts in the usual way on the elements of algebra A. So if we have a homogeneous element A of degree G, then the action is given by this formula. You have an action of G hat on G. And on the other hand, if you have an action of G hat on G by automorphisms, then you define the subspace by this formula, and the algebra A becomes an algebra with G grading. Okay? So this is a very well-known duality. But sometimes the people who worked on gradings of Lie algebras, they consider it not G hat, but just the automorphisms themselves. And I think it's less convenient because in this case, you somehow bound with the structure of endomorphism algebra and the considering the group by itself, it's more convenient in many cases. I don't know, will I be able to convince you in this, but that's what we experienced. Now, I will describe some results on gradings of full matrix algebras. So there was a paper in 2001 in Journal of Algebra where we completely described the gradings of matrix algebra by finite abelian group G. So for this, we need two kinds of gradings. One kind is called elementary gradings. And elementary gradings are given in this way. Take any n-tuple of elements from group G. And if you take matrix units, they are always homogeneous. Actually, I didn't write which matrix unit. So maybe I have to write it here. So if you take E, this strange shock, I'm strong. So matrix unit, it's always a homogeneous element, and the degree of this is GI inverse GJ. Okay? So this grading arises in the natural way. If you consider the matrix algebra MN of F as the algebra of endomorphisms of the vector space f to the power n, and this vector space, let's write it V, it is graded by the group G, okay, and then we can make the endomorphism algebra into a graded algebra in the natural way, so the homogeneous component of such degree is those endomorphisms which mapped GI into VGJ. Okay? So this is one of the most natural gradings that arise on the matrix algebra. They're simply induced by the gradings of the respective vector space. But there are some other gradings. And these gradings were called by us fine. And a fine grading is such where the dimension of each component is less or equal than 1 for any G. Okay? And actually, the next sentence means a simple proposition. If you have a matrix algebra and the grading is such that each component is at most one-dimensional, then, if the identity component is one-dimensional, then all the other components are one-dimensional as well, at most one-dimensional, and this is a finely graded algebra. Here is a little bit difference in terminology. Sorry, just a few words. With the works of Patera and his co-authors, they call a fine grading is a grading which cannot be refined. And this includes not only these fine gradings, which I describe here, but for instance, if you take a root grading, it cannot be refined. So it's also, they also call it fine. But somehow we work more or less independently of those old papers, and we call fine gradings are those where the components are precisely at most one-dimensional. I will talk about Patera's results a little bit later and the connection with ours. So there is a theorem which completely describes the gradings on the full matrix algebra. So if you are given a G grading, then there is a subgroup H in G such that this set, this vector space with support H is a matrix subalgebra with fine grading, and there is a matrix subalgebra such that it is graded in elementary way by some tuple of elements, and the whole algebra is just the tensor product of the algebra with fine grading and the matrix algebra with elementary grading. So you can say that for a full matrix algebra, there are essentially two kinds of gradings. Any grading by a finite abelian group will split into two gradings of fine grading one and elementary grading. Of course, I didn't say anything about fine gradings, how they arise. This will be in the next theorem. And here I describe how the degree of an element of this tensor product is given. Well, if we take X, which is presumably from a component with fine grading, and the matrix unit E sub ij, then the degree is gi inverse hgj, where X is a component from fine grading, and eij is from another component. Why do I write it in this strange way, gi inverse hgj, but not gi inverse gjh? Well, the thing is, this theorem is true for non-commutative groups as well. So in last year, we published in Canadian Mathematical Bulletin paper where we show that the same decomposition, this is a paper with Zaitsev and myself, or myself with Zaitsev, but without Segal. So we show that the same thing holds also for non-commutative group gradings. Okay? So even if the group is non-commutative, you can still split the gradings into fine gradings and elementary. What is special about fine gradings? The thing is that the components are spanned by non-singular matrices. So in the elementary gradings, you always have singular matrices, more or less. Matrix units are very much singular. But in this opposite case, we have gradings by non-degenerate matrices. So this is a very nice basis of matrix algebra. And now I want to say more about these fine gradings. Actually, they also can be completely described, and now some names should be called. So here I just define what is an epsilon grading. We take nth root of 1, and we define two matrices. And of course, people will immediately remember this is so-called generalized Pauli matrices. In 1927, Pauli introduced some matrices of order 2 by 2, which were used in quantum mechanics. And these were matrices of this kind. Okay. So, and of course, if you add to this an identity matrix, you will get a basis of the full matrix algebra. These were called Pauli matrices. Well, later probably. And if you generalize these matrices to the n times n case, you get the matrices which I have here, except that you see that the last matrix is multiplied by I somehow. We have 1 minus 1 on the diagonal. And historically, these matrices had this I. I don't know why. And I'm not able to explain you all the quantum mechanical reasons for introducing this. There were also Dirac matrices related to this and, you know, lots of history behind this. But somehow we use it like savages. We just use them for practical purposes. And so these are matrices of, you can call them generalized Pauli matrices. So if you take the power of this, multiply them, you get n square matrices, and these matrices form a basis of the full matrix algebra. So, well, in a sense, I more and more come to conclusion that the full matrix algebra is nothing but the group algebra of the square of cyclic group of order n, but the multiplication is a little bit spoiled. Actually spoiled by a very well-known cocycle. So essentially matrix algebras are commutative. Yeah, on the one hand they are considered as the opposite to commutative case. On the other hand, if you change multiplication by character, you get exactly the matrix, the group algebra of Zn cross Zn. And actually this observation is helpful because this change of multiplication is controllable and preserves lots of properties of algebras. But this is of course a topic for another talk. Okay, now what can we say about fine gradings of matrix algebras in general? So there is a theorem, it's again from the paper of Segal, Zaitsev and myself. So if we have a fine grading, then if you take the subport of the fine grading, it's always a subgroup. And that's what I say, then the matrix algebra is the group ring of this subgroup. Well, up to change of multiplication. So if we now assume that the support is just equal to the group itself, then the group splits into the direct product of squares of cyclic groups, and the matrix algebra is split into the tensor products of matrix algebras, and on each of these matrix algebras, the grading is of this kind, by this kind of matrices, and epsilon I is primitive and root of one. And the degree of the element in the tensor product is defined in the natural way. Okay? So, well, actually, the matrix algebras are so close to group algebras, then you can even further split into the tensor product so that you have primary components. You can even further split. So these Ni's can be taken as p-th powers, as where p is a prime number. It's like you decompose an abelian group into the primary components, take the group rings, it splits into the tensor product. Exactly the same happens to the matrix algebra. So that's what we learned and published about the gradings of the full matrix algebra. Now, let's talk about the gradings of algebras which have involution. If we want to keep closer to Lie algebras, of course we need associative algebra with involution. And then, considering symmetric elements, Q-symmetric elements, we get all types of classical algebras, Lie algebras or Jordan algebras. Okay? So, suppose that we have an algebra which is graded by a group G, and there is an involution, so we consider the symmetric elements and skew-symmetric elements, then the whole algebra is split into the sum, and there is a very useful lemma, which is used later throughout, that if we have a grading such that both symmetric and skew-symmetric elements form a graded subspace. Well, actually, only one of these conditions is necessary. If one of these is graded, then it's quite easy to show that the other is also graded. But let's assume that the components are graded. Then what is interesting is that each component, each homogeneous component, is stable under the involution. Okay? And suppose that we have a subset such that the sum, this subset R sub S, the sum of this, is a subalgebra of R. Then this subalgebra is always stable under involution, and the symmetric and skew-symmetric elements are graded subspaces of L. So L, you can start with R associative algebra, and L can be Lie algebra or Jordan algebra. This is the way how we transfer gradings from the bigger algebra to smaller algebra, which is, say, symmetric elements of some involution. And now we have a proposition. Okay. So suppose that we have a G-graded algebra with involution such that the symmetric and skew-symmetric are graded. Then the whole algebra as a G-graded algebra again splits into the tensor products of subalgebras. Each of them is again a matrix algebra. The zeros component has elementary gradings, and the remaining components have fine gradings, actually epsilon I gradings by generalized Pauli matrices, and all this stuff is stable under the gradient under star. So this lemma is important because it allows us to consider not this mixed case where the grading is arbitrary, but only the cases of epsilon I precisely gradings, algebras with precise gradings, where we can completely analyze the situation. So we reduce, also in the case of algebra with involutions, everything to the cases of elementary gradings and fine gradings. Okay? And of course, you can do lots of things by hand, because the gradings are completely described. For instance, what are the elementary gradings? So the elementary gradings can be obtained in this way. You consider, so suppose you have a group G and you have an n-tuple. Okay. So suppose we have an elementary grading given by this n-tuple. Then you consider for each character, you consider a matrix. Actually, there is a family of matrices. And they are given by this formula, they are diagonal matrices. Okay? And so the automorphism which correspond to this grading are given by conjugation by these particular matrices. So you just work with matrices and determine whatever you want. So this is a very convenient way. In the case of fine gradings, the matrices which correspond to conjugation, which give automorphisms, are just the X sub J themselves, so for the fine grading. Okay, so this tells us that in handling the cases of Jordan and Lie algebras, you also can reduce to these particular kinds of gradings, fine and elementary. And now there is a lemma, which is important in what follows. So this lemma tells us the following. Suppose that we have a matrix algebra, and there is an epsilon grading, and such that the symmetric and skew symmetric elements form graded subspaces. This is a very important lemma, because it tells us that we can only have case n equal 2. So the fine gradings arise on full matrix algebra with involution, and they preserve symmetric and skew-symmetric parts only if n equal to 2, and tensor products of those. For instance, on the matrix algebra m 2 to the power of k, you can have fine gradings which respect symmetric and skew-symmetric parts if this is given by this formula. Okay? So you can take Pauli matrices here, 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 and here, and then plug one into another, and you get gradings of matrix algebra of this order, which respect symmetric and skew-symmetric elements. On the other hand, if you take a matrix algebra of order, which is, say, odd number, then you never have gradings which respect symmetric and skew-symmetric part. So from here, we will see later one important consequence, that in the cases except for A case, we don't have fine gradings except those which are tensor products of matrices of order 2, and moreover, in the case of B, we don't have them at all. Okay? So this lemma tells us that if we have an epsilon grading, then the n should be equal to 2, and only four cases are possible. So it not only gives you the order of the matrix, it completely describes the involution. Well, we know that any involution can be given by this formula, as in 1. So this should be conjugation of the transpose x to the power of t. I don't know how to pronounce if t is to the left of x. So this is an involution, and this lemma completely describes you the cases, how the involution should look like with the help of what matrices, and what kind of gradings do we get on the respective algebras. Sorry, where? In number one. So the involution is given by this. Yeah, of course, yeah. So, well, naturally, I think this should be R plus. No. Let me just make it precise, not to cheat. Maybe not, because sometimes they change places. Just a second. Yeah, you're right. So these are only cases which are possible. And so you can say that, for instance, SL2 has a fine grading, and this fine grading is obtained as in the first case. So R minus is exactly SL2, and so we have fine gradings. And if you look into Pauli matrices, of course, they are traceless, so they form a grading of SL2. Now, as I mentioned in the previous proposition, we have to deal with kinds of gradings, elementary kinds, elementary gradings, and fine gradings separately in the case of algebra with involution. And here I want to present the results which we have here. Actually the fine gradings I just considered, because I showed that fine gradings in the case of algebras with involution, which respect the symmetric and skew-symmetric parts, are available only in limited situation. All the rest is elementary gradings. Now we have to combine elementary gradings on full matrix algebras with involution. Okay? So, suppose that we have an algebra with elementary involution, elementary grading, and there is an involution. The involution is defined by non-degenerate bilinear form. Well, actually, this phi capital is just the matrix of this bilinear form, phi small. And suppose that the symmetric and skew-symmetric spaces are graded. In this case, our algebra R as a graded algebra is isomorphic to the full matrix algebra with an elementary grading defined by n tuple, involution given as usual. But the matrix phi capital should look like this. For n is equal to 2L, and there are two cases where n is odd and n is even. So if it is even, then the grading by this tuple should be very much restricted. So we see that the whole set is split into two halves, and this condition should be satisfied. So only in this case an elementary grading can respect the symmetric and skew-symmetric part. So this is if the bilinear form is skew-symmetric, and otherwise, maybe I made a mistake. I said that this is splitting into odd-dimensional and even-dimensional case, but this is not true. It's splitting as for phi being symmetric or skew-symmetric. So if it is skew-symmetric, then we have only this option. So the form is given by this matrix, and the n-tuple is given by this condition. But if the form is symmetric, then we have this kind of bilinear form, and the conditions look like this. Well, everything is very natural, of course. So here is the matrix of order m, and exactly first m elements squared should be equal to each other and to all other products. Well, actually, maybe we keep it for full generality, but actually if you have a grading with the tuple, you can always choose one of these elements equal to E, the identity element, because the grading is given by this formula, and one of the elements obviously cancels out in this product. So you can always set one somewhere in this tuple. Okay, so we see that the elementary grading can be obtained only if there are very stringent conditions imposed on the components of this n-tuple imposed. Okay, so this is already very close to describing gradings on simple Lie algebras of types BCD and respective types of simple Jordan algebras. Okay. Okay. So I just write that if you take any BCD simple Lie algebra, it can be written as the skew symmetric elements of some matrix algebra. Well, I did try this. Well, it's one of the phrases here probably is quite ignorant, I don't know. I wanted to fill it precisely, but I forgot. So if you consider the automorphisms of BCD type Lie algebras, they are inner. In what sense? It's not exactly the sense which is given in Lie algebra theory, but in the sense of just matrix algebras. So in the case of B and BC, we have them, any automorphism is a conjugation by a matrix. And the same is in all cases D, L greater than 4. But this matrix need not be, how to say? I forgot. Okay, what I wanted to say that in each the automorphism of each of the algebras can be given by this formula. Okay. Okay, but in the case of BC, they correspond to inner automorphisms. But in the case of D, they need not correspond to inner automorphisms of Lie algebra, but they still remain to be inner automorphisms of the matrix algebra. Okay? I just forgot one word. That's the субсинертогональный преобразователь. Субсинертогональный преобразователь. Okay. Doesn't matter. So orthogonal matrix with determinant minus 1, except for 1. Okay, in other cases, this could be taken 1. In this case, minus 1. Okay. And what does it say to us? That if we have a grading of a Lie algebra, say, R minus, where R is Mn, then this grading is equivalent to the action of the group G hat, some commutative transformations, and they are induced by automorphisms of the matrix algebra. So we have the same group acting here because this generates this. And then we have a grading here, which are completely described. We just restrict it, and we get the gradings of this algebra. Of course, the situation is this. You get a grading of the matrix algebra, and then you want to find a copy of this algebra sitting inside matrix algebra, which is invariant under this grading. So it's not just you take the skew-symmetric matrices, say, with respect to trivial form, and you expect that the grading of matrix algebra induces something on this. It probably doesn't induce. But you can choose a form such that a grading of matrix algebra gives something on the skew-symmetric elements. So this is possible to describe when this can be done and how is it. Yes, exactly. So this was taken care of, yeah. That's why I gave this lemma before. So now I can formulate some results. The simplest case is B case. In the B case, as I mentioned, because the order of matrix algebra is odd, where it sits like skew symmetric elements, we don't have any fine gradings. Everything is induced by elementary gradings. And also we know that the elementary gradings are very restricted by the previous results. So there are some conditions on the grading elements. And if you sum all this up, then we get this theorem. So suppose that we have a simple Lie algebra of type B sub K. The field is algebraically closed of characteristic 0, group finite abelian. Then L is a graded algebra, is isomorphic to skew symmetric elements of the matrix algebra with elementary grading. There are conditions imposed on the grading elements. Well, actually, you see, if you put one of these elements, say G1 equal to 1, then you will see that the grading elements should be of order 2. So in this part of the full metric of the algebra, you must have gradings by elements of order 2, and otherwise the elements which are kind of in this A and minus AT, that must be inverses of each other, which is natural to expect. So the full form as a graded algebra, as a graded Lie algebra, this will be isomorphic to the algebra of all matrices of this form. So P is a skew symmetric matrix, and here we have quite a usual picture. And what is S and T? S and T just arbitrary matrices, but this is inverse of the transpose of T. This is inverse of transpose of S and of T. So we see that the picture is very quiet and very nice. So essentially, whatever grading by a finite abelian group you have, you don't have anything unexpected, more or less. Yeah, the situation is very smooth. And in a sense, if you look, for instance, at classification of cuts for elements of finite order, it's given in terms of various root systems and root decomposition of algebras. And I think that it's complete for the cyclic groups. But I think this is quite visual. So you see that you are given just matrices, and you exactly know which matrices are homogeneous, which are not. Maybe someone who is better used to working with particular kinds of root systems and all this stuff. So it's more natural, but I think that you can easier explain to everyone the gradings of this kind of Lie algebra. So you don't need to speak anything about Cartan subalgebras, but you see that in this case, of course, there is a Cartan subalgebra which has zero grading. This is on the diagonal. And in a sense, this grading is a kind of, you take the grading by roots and then collate several root spaces together. And that's what you get. So if you refine this grading, then you get the usual Cartan decomposition. So that's what we have here. But this is only in the case B. Only in the case B, we see that essentially whatever group you have, not necessarily cyclic now, as in the case of cuts, you still have the same picture.
Because somehow the other components are trivial.
Yeah. The identity component is trivial, not in the sense which I use. I said the trivial component is identity is trivial when it has only identity matrix in it. But here, all the diagonal matrices sit in it. Yeah. So in the case of elementary gradings, the diagonal matrices are all of trivial grading. Yeah. In the case of fine gradings, only one identity matrix is trivial grading. Yeah. But as soon as you have Cartan subalgebra inside the zero component, you have something like So that's quite natural picture, and the picture complicates if you go to the C or D case. First of all, I want to mention this proposition. So this deals with the elementary gradings in the C case. Yeah. So in the C case, as we see, we'll see, there are also fine gradings on the algebras. But let us first deal with the elementary gradings. So if we have a simple algebra of type C sub K, and suppose that it's written as the skew symmetric elements of the matrix algebra of order 2K, and the grading on the matrix algebra is elementary, then we must have this condition. So essentially that the grading elements just split into two, one half of them is arbitrary, and the other half are just the inverses of the first half. That's what is written here. So the grading must be by such elements, which is quite natural because the algebra looks like this. So what you have on the northwest corner or southeast corner should be the inverses of each other. So, and we simply say that in this case, this is the form of the, in some bases, you can write this algebra R minus as the collection of these matrices, and the grading is given by this n-tuple. Okay? So essentially, you just you forget about that this is split into four blocks. It's just a matrix algebra, and you give each E sub ij the grading by this formula, and then you remember that there was still some splitting, and this is the grading of the C algebra. Okay? But this is the case where we assume from the beginning that the grading is induced from elementary grading of the full matrix algebra, which need not be the case. Okay, and now I can completely describe the gradings of I just give it as an example for the case of C, and D is almost the same. Oh, this was B. Now I want to formulate the result in the case of C, L algebras. So suppose that we have a grading by a finite abelian group, then N, CL of course is embedded into MN, which is 2L, and this number is split into the product, 2 to the power of K times some number Q, and L is a graded algebra, is isomorphic to such a thing. So what you take, R minus tensor T plus, R plus tensor T minus. And I have to explain this. So as you probably remember, the whole algebra splits into the product, tensor product of algebra with fine grading and with elementary grading. So we have to take components. For instance, if you want to obtain Lie algebra, that is Q-symmetric elements, we take tensor products such that we have 1 minus, 1 plus, 1 plus, 1 minus. Then you get Q-symmetric elements. If instead you take here R minus, T minus, R plus, T plus, then you will get the grading of the respective Jordan algebra. Okay, so the gradings of Jordan algebra, they just accompany, they go side by side with the gradings of Lie algebras. So here, R plus and R minus, they are described in the previous theorem, and as in the case of elementary gradings, and this is the algebra which is the product of 2x2 matrix algebras with bilinear forms described in, you remember there was a lemma about 2x2 matrices, so all bilinear forms were described, and in this case, let me just see what I wrote here, R plus and R minus are as in the proposition which I had before. Maybe I cannot find it really. this forms, you see phi, it's a bilinear form on this second component of the tensor product. It splits into the product of tensor of the forms on the matrix algebras of order 2. And if, for instance, you want to have component T plus, you must choose a number of these forms, which are, say, even number of skew-symmetric forms should be chosen. Then you get the T plus component. So if you take this phi 1 tensor phi k, and among them there is even number of skew-symmetric forms, then this will belong to R plus, T plus case. Otherwise, this will belong to T minus case. So you just take tensor products and you set into skew-symmetric matrices of one type, symmetric matrices of the other type, and you get a collection of matrices which form the grading of this algebra. Okay? So this you see that in this case we are allowed to include matrix algebras of order 2 with fine gradings. And in this way you can maybe I forgot to say something that to mention that D case is completely analogous to C case, and it's just the replacing of symmetric by skew symmetric at some point. But these theorems allow you to describe completely the gradings on various kinds of algebras. For instance, if you take C4, then by theorem 2, this algebra can be written, and I speak only about fine gradings. So this should be the product of three matrix algebras of order 2, and among them there must be even number, odd number of skew-symmetric forms. And in this way, if you look at this, you will see there are 28 gradings. One question which arises here, what is different gradients, what are the same gradients, equivalent gradients? Of course, if you look at these 28 gradients, they are more or less of the same kind. Yeah? But if you speak about the graded algebra, say Rj and G in some group G, and the same algebra, or say S, is S, SH, H in, say, group G. Okay? So what does it mean that they are isomorphic as graded algebra? You can say that then, of course, G and H must be the same groups. This is one approach. And then the components of degree G must go into the components with the same degree. But the other thing is that suppose that the groups are isomorphic. You can include the isomorphism of these groups or automorphism of this group. And so you allow elements, the components of some degree G, go to the components of degree which is the image or under this automorphism. Okay? So if you look at these gradings here of this algebra, then, you know, the grading group here is, say, G1, G2, G3, but all of these groups are isomorphic. You can simply change them places. And this gives you the automorphism of this algebra. In this sense, there are much less number of gradings. So if you allow the automorphism of the group into the definition of equivalent gradings, then the number of gradings becomes much less. Well, you could say simply that we can speak about formal definition of equivalence, but we can speak about, so to say, real. What are the real splitting of the algebra into the graded subspaces? Whatever graded, they can be graded by whatever, but physically, this is some subspaces which are multiplied in the same way, which consist of the same number of elements. Of course, it's natural to call this type of relation an equivalence of gradings. So, yeah. No, usually when people define graded, isomorphic graded algebra, say G-graded algebras, which are isomorphic, G already fixed. And then you must map elements of the same degree into the elements of the same degree. Okay, but I think that it's very practical if you're allowed to replace the group. Yeah? And speaking about this, I just wanted to mention that SL case, it's essentially finished. It's a little bit of left. The point is this, that if you have L, which is SL, and that's of course embedded into MN, okay, and then the automorphism of Lie algebras, a half of them is induced from the matrix algebra, but the other half is not. So if you just map, this gives you an outer automorphism, and if you have an algebra graded by a group G, take G hat, and this G hat will contain a subgroup of index at most 2, okay, which consists of inner automorphisms. And then, of course, we know everything about this, because this is a gradient from matrix algebra. Essentially, any gradient of matrix algebra, as I described, is with traceless matrices, except for the identity one. It always induces gradients of SL. So this is, you know, one of the nice and very simple observations. You have lots of gradients on SLN. But now let's do the following thing. Consider the orthogonal complement of this subgroup L in G, say H. This is a group of order H, of order 2, okay, at most. And then, if L is graded by G, it is also graded by G mod H. Okay? So, it's always like this. If something is graded by a group, it's also graded by factor group. You just make together the cosets. Yeah? And then we can say that if we have a grading of the SLN by any group G, then G mod H grading is induced from the full matrix algebra. So you can use all this theory to that situation. And actually, much more can be said, because if the group G is torsion-free, only elementary gradings are possible. If the group G does not have elements of order 2, only gradings from the matrix algebra are possible. So this is a theorem. So if a group G does not have elements of order 2, then any grading of SLN is induced from the full matrix algebra. And it can be described by the theorem which I gave at the very beginning. Okay? So, as you see, the situation is that in the cases BCD, we have a complete description. In SLN, we have virtually complete description. But this will be finished, I think. Well, it's almost like this. For instance, for cyclic groups, we have Katz's classification, but we also can describe it in terms of our language. So for cyclic groups as well. But as I said, for any groups without elements of order 2, we have this full classification. Okay, thank you very much.